Welcome to Beta Talk. Beta Talk is a podcast which usually disseminates and amplifies and disseminates the voice of the engineer. If this is the first time you've listened to this podcast, I do feel sorry for you because this one is just me and unfortunately I do waffle on. So I'm going to apologise for that straight away. And today we're talking about training. Training is kind of my speciality within this sector. It's what I've been studying for a long time, studying how it works, why it's not working. So what we're going to talk about today is we're going to talk about my three principles of Beta Teach, and I'm going to be looking for some organisations, local authorities, etc., to sort of pledge their support for this methodology of mine. So I'm friends with Ovtech and MCS and Heat Pump Association and Women Engineering Society, Ground Source Heat Pump Association. So I'll be looking for the pledge of support for that, because this is how we're going to have to get training and learning. It's not working, put it that way, at the moment. So I'll be looking for support from people like Trustmark, Octopus maybe, Zero Homes, you know, all the people that are sort of involved in this really. So we're going to talk about the three principles of Beta Teach. We're going to talk about the challenges with apprenticeships. Lots of people talk about apprenticeships. We're going to talk about how people are currently trained. Let's say they're already in the industry. You know, how do they upskill? What happens at the moment? You know, how do they get upskilled? And I want to start with this thing of around local authorities. So last episode I did was about sort of the local aspect of this, and we were chatting to John Taylor about energy hubs, and energy hubs, there's five in the country, and they're made up of the LEPs, and the LEPs are made up of our local authorities. Now, I've said on sort of social media that we kind of need an army of engineers to solve the problem of decarbonising heat. And one of the problems we've got is, well, it's not a problem, nothing's a problem, it's a challenge, is we've got people, a lot of our industry is self-employed, and I don't think you're going to get them all to become MCS, and I don't think they're all going to want to be employed by larger companies. So you need to think about that. We need to think about that, you know, because some of the best engineers out there, I mean, Steve Calvert, for instance, in Wales, I'll put him against anyone in Europe. He is a machine. The guy is awesome. I don't know if you follow Steve on social media. I mean, he acts like a complete child. He won't mind me saying that. He's a wonderful guy. You know, he's got I don't know if he wants me to talk about his sort of past history, but, you know, he was in the army. He was a sniper out in Bosnia. He's a lovely, lovely guy. The guy is, and if you ask most of the best in this country who is the best, they're going to be pointing at someone like Steve. And he's self-employed. I don't think he wants to be employed. He is he epitomises my three principles of Beta Teach, which is the methodology of learning, and I'll be talking about that later. But he's a resource that sort of people and local authorities should be using. I mean, design wise, you know, he's unbelievable. So I'm going to talk a bit about design and how it's probably the most important aspect of this whole thing, because you can get quite a few people. I could go in and put stuff in and put a heat pump in, but I'd want to work from a good design, a good plan, someone like Steve's. So that's where the value really lies. It's not that the value of an installation job where it's $10,000, $15,000 isn't in the actual cost of the equipment. It's not in how much you're going to charge me or people like me to put it in. It's someone like Steve who went in that house and just did the assessment and then just worked out exactly what you need. And these very clever designers are going to be key, and they're going to probably want to work freelance, and they're all going to be Beta Teach engineers, because they're going to follow the principles which I'll talk about. So local authorities, I think, have the biggest challenge, because if this all goes wrong and net zero targets aren't met, the buck kind of falls with them, I imagine. I mean, it doesn't fall with, no one's going to start pointing fingers at the manufacturers of heat pumps. No one's going to start pointing fingers at the installation engineers. No one's going to point fingers at associations and institutions and councils and the plethora of them we've got. It's going to be the finger's going to point at the local authority. So I should imagine local authorities really, it's going to be a very big benefit to them to know who is good and competent. And that's a problem because they don't know at the moment. No one does really. You can't tell it by qualification, and you can't tell it if just because they're registered to someone like MCS. And I think most of my audience now realises that. Well, I know they realise it. You know, I get special advisors to energy secretaries ringing me up saying, can I recommend them an engineer? You know, it's not a qualification or registration that is going to tell you that someone's competent. So local authorities is where I think I can help them. So, you know, my beta teach is not only sort of the methodology, it's going to be a platform as well, and that's currently going to be piloted by Ciro Holmes. They're going to help me pilot that with some retrofit people. So I think local authorities having access to information, and it might fit in with some of the DPS systems, dynamic purchase systems that they're sort of some of them are thinking about, or frameworks. You know, they're going to need to know who these people are, who the ones are for design actually, and who the ones are to maybe coordinate. Same with retrofit coordinate. You're going to need to know who the good ones are really, and that comes down to learning. And if you can evidence people are continually learning, you've got a good bet they're going to be okay. And currently our training system doesn't do that. It just evidences that you've turned up. We're going to sort of talk about that a little bit later. So one of the things people talk about is in our industry, and I'm going to come back to this sort of local authority aspect as well, I think. So one of the things I want to talk about first is apprenticeships. Let's start at the beginning. So lots of people have views on apprenticeships. You'll see every year the apprenticeship hashtag appears, and all and sundry will jump onto that hashtag, as they do with all sorts of hashtags. And if you were to ask a lot of people about training or in this industry, they say, I'll bring back the apprenticeships and et cetera, et cetera. And someone like me will say, well, where did they go then? And they look at you and they think, well, didn't they go? So a lot of people talk about the apprenticeships and they don't actually understand sort of how they work and what's been going on. So apprenticeships sounds like it's a great idea, but they do have problems, or let's call the problems challenges. So I've taught quite a lot of apprentices, and one of the problems is you perpetuate low skill. Because we're in a low-skill trade, and if your apprentices are going out to work with employers that haven't particularly got a lot of knowledge around certain areas, it perpetuates the problem. So that's something that not many people actually think about. You know, it's no good having these apprenticeships if they're going to get employed by employers who are actually quite low-skill themselves. The other challenge with apprenticeships is you've got to bear in mind our industry is mainly self-employed across all the construction trades and building services industry. So building services is plumbing and electricians. Most of these companies are it's a self-employed industry. Self-employed people don't tend to take on apprenticeships. You might find that most of the apprentices I ever taught, you know, they were the daughters or the sons or the nieces or the nephews of, you know, the family members. So we struggle with getting companies to take on apprentices. And that's another challenge, because another problem we've got going on in colleges, I mean, don't anyone out there think that we haven't got young people going into trades or interested in trades, because we have. So I get very frustrated when I read all these news articles about we need to go into schools, inspire young people not to take the university route, but go into trades. We have got thousands and thousands of them already doing that. So I don't know if you know, but back in 2013, it became obligatory that a young person, once they left school, stays in education till they're 18. So that didn't matter. Let's say the mum and dad has got a nice family business. They might be selling something on eBay and doing very well, thank you. And, you know, they might want to bring their son or daughter into the fold of that business. But that son or daughter has to now go to college, unless the mum and dad are prepared to put them on an apprenticeship that might be related to whatever they do, but it might not be related. You know, I've known car mechanics, very, very good car mechanics that have got a very good customer base. They don't need their child to go to college to do the apprenticeship. They just want them to there to work with them 5 days of the week, but they can't do that now. They either have to put them on a car mechanic apprenticeship or let them go to college onto a full-time course. And we've got probably over 100,000 young people will join and enroll on the construction and building services courses each year at college. So if you go into a college, you'll see that for every 10 people, you've probably got one apprentice, and then the other nine are what we call diploma students. They're all learning exactly the same stuff. They're all taking exactly the same exams. So I don't know if you know, each one of them young people is worth kind of a minimum of £10,000, your money, taxpayers' money. So the college is can draw down funding for them 2 years. They have to be in education, £10,000. Now, obviously, colleges have overheads, so I don't know how much profit they make. But the people that are making quite good profit are the certificate companies, City and Guilds, BPEC, EAL, because they all get money for enrolment and they all get money for each certificate. And so kind of, it's frustrating for a lot of people that have been involved in that college industry, further education, because we kind of see it as just bums on seat. It really is. Some of us go, in my opinion, we're exploiting young people because hundreds of thousands of them are getting all these certificates each year and none of them ever get into our industry, because how can they? And we've got this thing of T-levels now, which won't solve the problem. I mean, the T-level is probably just the name change of diploma. Diploma students are all supposed to have meaningful work experience, but no one can find the work experience for them. It's not out there. So T-levels is basically that and more. You're supposed to find more work experience for a T-level student. Well, where's it all going to come from? If we haven't got trades taking on people as apprentices, you know, it's very unlikely they're going to allow people to come on for a month and do work experience. And we're talking, like I say, there's over 100,000 just on the construction and building services courses. City and Guilds enrolls 2 million people every year, 2 million. Now, the other problem is City and Guilds used to mean you were fully qualified. So back in my day, if you went to college, only apprentices went to college. You know, the plasterers, the bricklayers, plumbers. Only the apprentices went to college. So City and Guilds actually did mean you were getting fully qualified. It doesn't mean that now. You know, hundreds of thousands of City and Guilds certificates get handed out every year. And it just means you've passed exams. It doesn't mean you've actually set foot in someone's home to do any work. It doesn't mean you've set foot on a building site to do any work. And it doesn't mean you're qualified at all now. And so the biggest challenge is, if you want to talk about apprenticeships, please, 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 whoever is involved in that, find the jobs first. An apprenticeship is two things. It's the apprentice and the job they're in, the employer. Find the employers first. Don't just start all these courses and think you've solved the problem. We've got like heat pump courses starting soon and all these apprenticeships. Find the jobs first, because otherwise you're just going to send people to college, these young people, and they never end up in a job. They do their 2 years at college. £10,000 has been claimed by all and sundry. You can get their hands on it. And these young people just leave, never going into our industry. And it's very sad. I've had parents, honestly, I've had parents cry in front of me. Nathan, can't you take them on? Can't you start becoming taking them on? You know, it's very frustrating for the young person and the parents in some cases. So apprenticeships have challenges. One is that your apprentices are, you at the moment, currently working with generally low-skilled employers, so you're perpetuating the problem, and you need to find the work. You need to inspire. I mean, ideally, do we need certificate companies? We live in a world of smartphones and touch screens and stuff. Do we need a 400-year-old ancient system of printing a certificate to say you're competent when it actually doesn't mean you're competent? I don't think we do need them. I think money should be going and support should be going straight to the employer. You know, let's get these employers in. Let's inspire them with a bit of money. Let's train them how to empathise maybe with apprentices, how to sort of teach them better. That's where your apprentices learn. They learn on site. They don't learn from listening to lectures like me in college. They really, really don't. We teach them to pass exams. That's basically what's going on. They're not going to remember most of that knowledge. The real learning happens out in the workplace. It always has done. Always has done. And we need to help employers to be able to train them the theory on site. I mean, there's nothing wrong with theory. It's very important. But we can do that at the site level in the workplace. We don't need certificate companies anymore. We really don't, I don't think. So how do people get trained now? So if they're already in the industry and they're going to go on and do some renewables, at the moment they've got to go and do a BPEC or LCL certificate or qualification. And because don't that's another thing. I mean, not all certificates are qualifications. Sometimes they're just mapped to national occupational standards. But if I'm honest, that really doesn't matter either, because it's still very low quality training. And if you look at the way we train people at the moment, it's in a class usually. It'll be with a sort of an expert or supposedly expert, and they will be delivering instruction. They'll be lecturing that, and they'll be doing it from PowerPoint. Now, this has been evidenced. It's not me saying this. This has been evidenced as a very poor way of teaching. It has a very low impact on learning. And yet, all these new courses that are being engendered with government funding, they teach exactly the same, whether they're doing it offline or whether they're doing it actually in the class. It's with someone at the front delivering instruction. Instructional training has a low impact on learning, and it's not, like I say, it's been evidenced. So when I speak to people that are involved in training, I say, you know, what sort of methods do you use? What evidence-based practice do you use? You know, do you like the constructivists, you know, Piaget and Bruner and Vygotsky? I mean, they probably think I'm speaking an alien language. And that's, I find this is one of the biggest ironies. We are living in a world where we realise we've got to get this training right. It's not like we're training our national teams to go out there and win the Olympics. This is about our planet, and we've got to get this right. So you've got all these people in the discourse around training. You know, quite a few people right at the high echelons talking about training and waxing lyrical about it on different things, podcasts, in the news, etc., etc. When you actually ask them, you know, sort of what learning theorists do you like, or what sort of methods are you, what theory you're basing it on, and they actually haven't got a clue what you're talking about. And that's quite ironic for me, because we've got, you know, there's a great, great body of educational research out there. We've got some fantastic educationists, you know, some world-leading ones. I mean, Nick Shackleton-Jones is probably my favourite. Fantastic book, if you ever want to read one, How We Learn. You know, I'll probably use some of his analogies today in this podcast. But, yeah, we've got people like Dylan William, Marnie Thompson, Christine Leon. You know, they developed actually in around about 2005 sort of the principles, the three principles, what I kind of use and we'll be talking about in a minute. There's a lot of this research out there. And what do? We just do what is possibly the worst you can possibly do. Now, I understand why it's done this way, because we're all institutionalised. We're all institutionalised to think that education is you sit in a classroom and someone that's supposed to know a little bit more than you delivers a lecture and instructs you. And that's how we all get educated. And it's been known for a long, long time that's not a great way of learning. But we keep carry on doing it, don't we? Whether it's in schools or universities, we just carry on doing it. So why is it a bad way to teach, and why doesn't it have a good impact on learning? Well, one of the things, and we're going to sort of now, I suppose, talk about our three principles. One of the things we really have to understand with any training or learning, whether you're learning how to play chess, learning how to ride a bike, anything, it falls down on the learner. So Nick Shackleton-Jones uses this analogy that learning is like breathing. Learning is like breathing. We can't do it for them. We can't do it for them. We just can only help them by providing them sort of good resources or experiences. You know, the ownership is on them. So the first principle of BetaTeach is activate engineers and students as owners of their own learning. And it's actually quite challenging to do that. So I'm going to say that again. The first principle is activate engineers and students as owners of their own learning. You know, they've got to take ownership of their own learning. They've got to become autonomous learners. And adults are quite curious. If you ask a lot of adults or that are involved in this industry, and I do, because this is my passion, you know, are you a autonomous learner or self-directed learner? Are you passionate about learning? Yeah. Now, I've taught a lot of adults, and I used to teach some at night schools, and you'd be teaching people that are transitioning from industry, for different industries like police, fire brigade, anything, army, and I'd be teaching them, and I might be six months into the course, and they'll come up to me, and they all realise that they're not going to be fully qualified, you see. They realise they're just getting these diploma certificates, and they'd say to me, Nathan, can't you start up a company where we could come out and work for you for a few days, and we get our portfolio signed off, and happy days, we get our NVQ, and which they would. That's how it kind of works. I used to say to him, look, you know, my days on the tools are over. I don't want to do it anymore. And I'd say to them, you know, are you really passionate then about becoming a heating engineer? Yeah, we're so passionate. We're super passionate. And I'd sort of ask that again. What, you know, you really want to, and you're really interested in learning about? Yeah. So I'd say to them, you know, draw me a open vented system. What? Or show me how you pipe size. What? Well, you've done, you know, we did it for our exams like 2 months ago and stuff. Well, I don't know how to do that. I haven't been out on site yet. And I'd say to them, well, why do you need to be out on site? You know, you've got this fantastic book with all these drawings in, et cetera, how to read pump curves, right? You know, why haven't you been going home and practicing your drawing? Because, you know, if you can practice drawing it, you're halfway there to be able to install. Oh, yeah, I see what you mean. And you can bet your bottom dollar half of them never ever did that. You did get a few that sort of took that on board and were religiously studying at home. And they'd activated their own autonomy over their own learning. And it's very strange. This is so fundamental. If people are going to learn, they realise the ownership's on them. And if we look at training, what's going on at the moment, everyone can go and sit on these courses. So let's say I'm back on the tools and I'm going to put some heat pumps in and I want to get MCS, etc. And so I'm going to go and do this heat pump course. So I know that I've just got to sit there for 3 days, pass the multiple choice, job done. I've never, ever got, I don't have to leave that centre and carry on my learning. And it's easy to pass. Everyone passes these courses in our industry, basically, because they're multiple choice. And you sit there for 3 days, like I say, you're listening to people chatting to you at the front. You know, my brain might be on completely different things. I might be thinking about, you know, where I can go for, you know, I've got to lose weight or something, or am I cooking dinner that day, or where will I walk the dogs? My mind might not be on the actual, what the person at the front speaking on. That's what's called passive learning. This instruction, this lecture, it doesn't work very well. And at the end of 3 days, what they'll do is they'll take me in the back room with all the equipment. They'll show me a little bit about that, how it works. And then they'll want me to perform maybe some fault finding tasks. And if I don't get the fault or find it, they're allowed to kind of gently coach. Now, I'm a qualified assessor. I'm actually qualified to assess other assessors and train them. And that's what you're allowed to do. You're kind of allowed to very gently nudge them to find the right answer. And when it comes to the multiple choice, if anyone's ever done a multiple choice, obviously you usually get, there's four optional answers. You've obviously got the right answer. You'll tend to have one that's very near the right answer, and then the other two will be completely off key. So if you only have to get 80% to pass, so you take your test, and let's say you haven't got quite 80% yet, you maybe got 60, so up you go, they show you the ones you got wrong, you come back, sit down, and you're generally going to pick that other one, the answer that's right. So generally everyone passes. So these courses and the way we assess them do not evidence learning, and that's not me saying it. Once again, this is the evidence out there. There's a lot of evidence about what supports learning. And you've got to really understand learning is kind of this longer process. It's not just 3 days or 5 days sitting in a class. It's a longer process. And my Beta Teach platform, that's what it does. It learns who is continually learning over time. And then that's going to kind of be important information for your local authorities, consumers, or whoever really that wants good quality engineers. So we've got some challenges there. And they're not kind of going to be solved in a way. You know, you're still going to get these companies. They're going to still want to do it that way. You're still going to have your organisations like MCS. You know, they'll still say, well, you know, they've got to go and do that BCEC course or the LCL course, and it's got to be done that way. So fair enough. You know, we can't. That's what has happened. So that's why I wanted to do this Beta Teach platform, where I could actually evidence learning. So let me talk a little bit more about that. So the three principles are, as I've already said, you've got to activate engineers and students as owners of their own learning. So you've got to give them something where they can continually learn, and that's what my platform will do. You've got to activate engineers and students as learning resources for one another. Now, I'm going to talk about that one again. Activate engineers and students as learning resources for one another. So this is vital. This is the secret sauce. When I first got on social media, the reason I stayed on social media, because I looked around, I thought, wow, these engineers, they're not just having banter with you. They are learning from each other. And they were in WhatsApp groups and Facebook groups. And you know, like I've mentioned Steve Calvert. Steve Calvert will be on the phone endlessly to some of the people. Way back, I'm going back. Now, he's kind of like the classic case of the apprentice becomes the master. So people now ring him up. And people are in their groups. I'm in a group with Steve. And honestly, I'm in a group, and over my birthday weekend, Adam and Steve probably spent 8 hours talking about solar thermal. Probably, I don't know, if you count up all the words, 10,000 words. That's all they talked about. These engineers love it. And this exchange of information where they're learning from each other, using each other's resources, is fundamental. It's been fundamental in every single industry sector since year dot. You know, having a conversation is how we learn. Not sitting people down on chairs and supposedly listen to some expert. I mean, if you think about it, we get these experts, we pull these experts in, we get them to write standards. Everyone says, oh, we've got to standardise the industry. And so you get experts who will spend months, supposedly experts, months and months and months writing standards. And I've been sent the standards to have a little look over as well. And then we expect people to sit in a class for 3 days and learn all this stuff which took experts months to write and expect all that knowledge to be in people's heads. It doesn't work. It really doesn't. And once again, the evidence says it doesn't work. So learning is a sort of this longevity of things that happens. So the third principle is engineer effective discussions and activities which evidence learning. So on my platform, I can get them talking about weather comp, low loss headers, buffers, volumizers, anything. Membrane barriers, you know, because all the retrofit people are going to be on there for the pilot with Ciro Holmes are kindly doing that with me. And we can just get them to chat about stuff. And my system records what they're chatting about, how long they're chatting about it, you know, who's getting the thumbs up for seemingly known or being helpful with certain. And it does this over time. So let's say like 2 years from now, I need someone that sort of really knows how to integrate a solar thermal system with a PV system, battery storage and a heat pump. Right. If I've got 2 years worth of evidence of someone being chatting about integration of them technologies over time, you know, they're getting on there sort of 3-4 hours a time of every week and chatting about that. You can bet your bottom dollar they're going to be quite knowledgeable about that particular thing. What happens is at the moment we all go and do our courses. So you've got people doing heat pump courses at the moment who might not see a heat pump for 3 years. Might not see one for 2 years. They don't really. They're not going to remember any of the stuff they were taught in class if they remembered it in the first place. That's called the forgetting curve. Once again, evidence. We know that we will forget stuff after literally two hours after you leave that course. Your brain starts to forget stuff. That's what your brain is designed to do. It's a very efficient thing. It doesn't want to keep storing loads of rubbish in its working memory. So to summarise, then the three principles of a beta teach are: engineer effective discussions and activities which evidence learning, activate engineers and students as owners of their own learning, activate engineers as learners resources for one another. And that all comes from sort of the evidence that was pulled out in around about 2005 from Dylan Willingham and Marley Thompson and Christine Leon. And so it's evidence-based practice. And that's what I want companies, associations, manufacturers to pledge their support for. So pledge their support to help me do that, to help me activate these people as owners of their own learning. And I'll be gently nudging you all. So I'll be sort of announcing on all my future podcasts who's come on board with the pledge. So, you know, I know Oftech and MCS will, and Energy Systems Catapult will, and HPA will. You know, I know quite a few. I think local authorities, it's going to be beneficial for you as well, because, you know, we might need a situation where local authorities actually become kind of MCS in their own right, which means they can use really good designers and self-employed people, and they kind of do the MCS side of things. Because you're not going to get all these self-employed people they're not going to all go MCS, and MCS companies, you know, these big ones that are going to be coming around the corner, you know, some of them are going to do some great, great things. Some of them aren't. You know, we're already seeing some of the engineers have been contacting me saying they're getting emails from a company saying, you know, we want to install 5 heat pumps a day. We're going to only use Daikin. And that rings alarm bells, you know, because obviously they're only using one manufacturer because they'll get good procurement. They're only going to do, I think, one or two designs, they were saying in this email. So these companies are just out there to make money. So I think local authorities, they need to get this right. They really do. So maybe they can have a department that sort of kind of does the MCS side of things. And then they've got a pool of good engineers to use from that I can sort of help supply them. To summarise, apprenticeships, you know, think about what an apprenticeship is. It's two things, the apprentice and the employer. You need to find the employers. You need to somehow inspire, encourage self-employed people to take an apprentice on. So you really do need to think about that. Outtakes. So I found this episode quite hard to do, really. Normally I'm chatting to engineers and it's just like a natural chat. I don't do any editing really at all, just upload it onto my podcast platform. But because it was just me, and I do waffle on, I really do. I inherited that from my mum, I think, bless her. It's I've got some stuff and content. I thought, well, I actually really wanted to get that in. So there's some outtakes that I'm going to bolt on now to the end, and you'll hear me talk about hands-on. How hands-on isn't great at all. It can be. I'm going to talk about mandatory CPD, which is also a load of rubbish unless it's done properly. Well. And then we'll talk about differentiation. What is that? So I've got some stuff that I was talking about that. And then there's a little story at the end where I was, you know, my best class I've ever taught were in the prison, the first class I've ever taught. So there's quite a long, waffly story about that at the end. So I've kind of got to the end of what I wanted to talk about. And I'll be looking for people to pledge their support for my methodology in the platform. But yeah, if you want to listen to a little bit more about CPD, hands-on, differentiation, and why my class in the prison were the best class I've ever taught, continue listening. Thank you. Hands-on training is always funny, sir, because it's the response you usually get from people that are involved in training. Oh, ours is good, Nathan. It's hands-on. You know, we've got equipment there. It's all hands-on training. And alarm bells always start ringing. And you'll get companies now involved in training. You know, it's active learning, it's engaged learning. So they're using all this sort of terminology that they've picked up off the internet. And you know, I'll ask them, you know, why is it active? Why is it active learning then? Yeah, because it's hands on. You know, it's active. So that's the first thing they get wrong. Active learning doesn't mean it's nothing to do with kinesthetics. It's not to do with hands on. It's about activating the brain, engaging the brain. And so a good example of that is, like, let's say I've gone to learn how to. Well, back in the day when I was learning, going to manufacturers' courses, and they'd show you how to put a component back together, let's say, what was a burner or a boiler, and the instructor's just showing you how to do that. They just put it back together, and then they're standing there with their tick box and say, Mr. Gambin, you know, put this component back together as part of your task. So you've just seen them do it, and there you are putting it back together, and your brain might be completely somewhere else. I might be thinking, you know, what am I supposed to walk the dogs tonight? Was it my turn? Am I supposed to be cooking dinner tonight? Is it my turn? What should we have for dinner? And I'm just copying. Yeah, you know, I've just seen what they did putting this thing back together. So I'll put it back together. Lots of ticks going in there, check boxes. Oh yeah, Mr. Gambling is competent at putting this particular component back together, whether it's a board, a burner, anything, heat pumps, anything. And people think that's active learning because I've used my hands. This hands-on training is the, you know, it's the be-all and end-all of good training. Absolute rubbish. Now, it could be, and this is where a lot of trainers, unfortunately, you know, a lot of trainers haven't been trained how to train effectively, and it doesn't take a lot. It really doesn't. So let's go back to that scenario. Let's say I've just watched an instructor put something back together, and he then says to me, all he's got to do is ask a question, usually a how or a why question. Now, how and why questions actually do activate the brain. So let's say he's just put this thing back together. He says, Mr. Gambling, I'd like you to put this back together, but how would you do it differently to me? So first of all, my brain's now probably thinking, why did he just ask me that then? And then so I think, well, all right, how would I do it differently to you? Well, why did he put that? Why did he take that bit off first to get this bit in? Surely if I put this bit in here first, it helps me now engage this part and I can get that bolt in. Yeah, why did he do that then second? You know, surely if I can do... Now, my brain's working. He's made me think. And when we think, we learn. And I'm now engaged. My brain isn't actually thinking, you know, cause it's very easy to carry out hands-on tasks, but think of completely different things. You can think about what music you want to listen to when you're home or something like that. But now I'm thinking completely on the task. So I'm kind of building neurological architecture so that when in the future I might come across this particular product or component, bearing in mind, there's millions of stuff in our industry. You know, you look how many makes and models and boilers are out there. You know, absolute astronomical amounts. So, you know, I might not encounter this part, product, or whatever it is for a long, long time. And when I do now and open up the casing, my brain's actually going to think, oh, yeah, I remember that I had to put this bolt first because I can remember my instructor put it this way first. And so I've got more potential of actually remembering it. So this notion that hands-on training is the be-all and end-all, it can be good, but, you know, your trainers need to know how to ask the right questions. And that's the same when they deliver in class. You know, ideally in class, you aren't delivering from the... There's a good book, I think it's called Delivering Teaching from the Back of the Room. Basically, the best teachers out there aren't going to say hardly anything in a class. They really aren't. And it's because it's about getting your students activated and engaged. And usually you do that by putting them into groups of three or four, set them a task or a challenge, and away they go where they have to think. And then you can pull them and walk back together again and they can exchange their ideas. Sitting everyone down and just listening to people just waffle on is not training. It's not effective at all. And, you know, differentiation, you'll get all your Ofsted inspectors, and when we all get observed in colleges. Now, I'm good at my inspections, and I used to get grade ones and grade twos. I used to help other teachers get their grade ones. Doesn't mean I'm a good teacher. It means I've worked out the formula of what Ofsted are looking for, basically. Doesn't mean you're good at all. And this one of the things you've got to do is differentiate your class, and that means realising and appreciating that everyone is learning at a different pace. We all learn at different paces. Some can get it very, very quickly. My dad always thinks I learn quickly. Well, I dispute that. You know, sometimes I can be reading something and then 10 minutes later I notice I've been reading the same sentence for about the last 5 minutes. Sometimes when I read stuff, my brain just sort of keeps going back, and the sentence doesn't even have to be a complicated sentence. So differentiation, you kind of have to evidence that you're differentiating your class. What a load of rubbish, because fundamentally, education can't ever differentiate. So Ofsted inspectors and all your senior management would say, yeah, you've got to appreciate that people learn. And that, yeah, it's good. That's great. They do. But come exam day, you know, all these 16-year-olds, come exam day, can you imagine a 16-year-old going up to an exam invigilator and say, oh, you know what, this maths test, I don't think I'm quite ready for it yet. Can I come back tomorrow? No, it doesn't work like that in our education. Education is an institution. It always has been. So all this rubbish that we are differentiating and allowing learners to learn at their own pace. No, we don't really fundamentally, do we? Because they all have to take that exam on the same day. They might be ill and they might be given another chance to take it. But, you know, can you imagine? I'd love to go back in time and actually go up to my exam invigilator and say, look, you know what? You've got to differentiate and appreciate that I learn at a different pace. And I'd like to take this exam in 2 weeks' time, please. They're going to tell you to sod off, aren't they? So realistically, there's probably no such thing as differentiation. I mean, it should be, because we all do learn at different paces. Once again, the platform can account for that, because it's people just learning over time. And this thing about CPD, you know, mandatory CPD will help the industry. Well, CPD stands for Continuous Professional Development. Continuous is quite a key word there, and development. So continuous and development means really you should know, all right, where was their learning at before they come on your CPD? Where was it at when they finished your CPD, and how are you going to develop it further? Don't know, Nathan. No, what it is just another course, usually half-day course. Well, it's not even that. Sometimes you can get accredited CPD by just watching something on a webinar. I've done some recently, and they say, do you want the CPD points? And I go, no, don't mean nothing to me. Oh, why is that then? Well, how can you evidence that I've actually learned anything? You've just watched us, haven't you? So, do you know what I mean? And it's this notion of CPD is going to be the big panacea to solve everything. No, it's not. Once again, lots of companies making money at CPD courses, no doubt. CPD doesn't mean you've learned anything, really. I mean, even if they mandate it that you've got to go on 5 CPD things every year, I know they do that in my cousin, who's a lorry driver. He sort of teaches some of that. But, you're just basically, you don't really know that anyone's learned anything. They go in and they maybe take a multiple choice, but a lot of the time with RCPD, whether it's SIBSE points accredited to it or not, you know, there's no real evidence of actually anyone learned anything. And you don't then look at it and say, oh, you learned this, but you didn't learn that, and we can now develop you. So this whole notion of development after it is rubbish. You know, there's a lot of waffle around training, and like I say, one of the biggest ones is when they say it's active and engaged, and they think it's all to do with hands-on. What a load of nonsense. It can be. You've just got to train the trainers how to effectively ask questions to engage the brain, basically. And, you know, you don't have to be doing hands-on to do that. So that's a problem. Local authorities also have this problem with M&E designers. So they'll employ an M&E company, mechanical and electrical engineering design, who'll come in and they'll design a system, whether it's for a big public building. I mean, we've got massive problems with NHS buildings. I mean, some of the bait teach engineers, they go in these big plant rooms, these energy centres, and the stuff they see in them is unbelievable. So once again, local authorities, when it comes to design and who's going to design the system, some of them are choosing these companies, these M&E design companies, and I'm not joking. They don't know a lot. They really don't. They got their degrees. Half of them have never had a spanner in their hand. Half of them have never set foot in an energy centre or plant room. You know, I even know some that, you know, they got their degree in 1990, the late 90s, and they're still designing systems with 80 degree flows and putting condensing boilers in the plant room. You know, how does that work? So you've got a lot of M&E consultants that are getting it really, really wrong. That's a big problem. So this, when it comes down to the design, ideally the best designers out there are the ones that actually have had hands-on experience working with this technology. People like your Steel Calverts, your Cy Poskitts, your Adams. There's a few out there, and this is, like I say, it's going to be quite a niche industry. But teaching night school is a bit different when you used to teach the adults. And the adults quickly learned that, once again, they're just only getting these diploma certificates. They're not getting fully qualified. They're not getting the full NVQ because you have to be, you know, out there on site. And they would come to me, a lot of them, and say, look, Nathan, can't you start up a company? And, you know, we come and work for you for a few days and the portfolio gets signed off and we get our NVQs. And I just say, look, no, I don't really want to be get my hands dirty anymore. Been there, done that. And they said, oh, come on, we're really passionate. And I used to say to them, well, how passionate are you about being a heating engineer? We're really, really passionate. And so I'd say to them, right, draw me an open-vented system. And they'd be like, what? I said, draw me an open-vented system. You've been on this course 6 months. You've got a fantastic book there of all the system drawings in there. Well, I can't do that. We haven't been out on site. And I said to them, well, you haven't really got to be out on site. Show me how you calculate pipe sizes or how you would read a pump curve. Well, don't know how to do that. And what they didn't realise was, when you take ownership of your learning, you don't just open your book when you're in a class, you go home. And you might think, well, there's a drawing here. I'm going to practice that over and over and over again so that I know it. So that when I do walk up to an airing cupboard, I'll know exactly what the cold feed and the hot distribution is, and, you know, an automatic bypass. And trying to actually get some of these adults to actually understand that, it was actually quite interesting. And if I'm honest, the best adult class I've ever taught, ever, is the first class I ever taught. So I suppose I was quite privileged, really, when I got into teaching, because I obviously taught adults first and then the youngsters at college. So I was asked to teach in the first prison in the UK that wanted to teach the Sitting Guild's plumbing and heating course. And of course, if it's the only prison doing it, and of course the only it was 12 prisoners that were coming on the course, and to get on that course you had to be a very well behaved prisoner. And it probably doesn't take a lot of brain cells to work out that if you're a very, very well behaved prisoner, you're likely to be in prison quite a long time. So Home Office and Probation Service and the Prison Service had sort of picked their 12 that they wanted for this course and sent them to this prison. And some of them relocated. Some of the prisoners were in different prisons around the country. And obviously this is a popular course. You know, plumbing's popular because it does get associated with money. So off they toddle. They come and they're on my course. And this is when I first realised City and Guilds had changed, and that, you know, it wasn't just apprentices going to college. Anyone could go to college now, which is great for inclusion,
But it does mean we've got oversubscribed courses now and everyone's getting certificates and not getting the work. And I had to tell 12 people that, 8 of them in for murder, that Home Office, Prison Service and Probation have got it wrong. You're not going to be fully qualified. It's impossible. And luckily, you know, they all sort of realised and said, yeah, that does make sense. Yeah, how can we be qualified if we're not actually out on site learning? So luckily for me, that didn't go wrong. But, you know, it's the first time I've ever taught, first time I've been in prison. You got I'm standing in front of 12 men, 8 of them in there for murder. And it wasn't probation or the Home Office's fault, because I suppose they thought that, you know, if you're getting sit in guilds, you're getting fully qualified. But that wasn't the case. It was called the Technical Cert back then, which changed its name to Diploma, which I think has now changed its name to T-Level. So these T-Levels, mathematically, they can't work. You cannot find that amount of work experience for someone. It's just not out there. You know, a T-Level is working alongside the apprentices. So the apprentices have already got kind of the jobs. Finding all that work experience for T-levels is a mathematical impossibility. And no one can answer me. You know, the Association of Colleges go quiet when you say, well, where's all that work experience coming from? I mean, we're supposed to find work experience for diploma students since 2013, and that all gets fudged. So this adult class in the prison, they really did get this whole thing of taking ownership of their learning. And I walked into work one day about 7 o'clock in the morning, and I had some prison guards come up to me. We want a word with you, Mr. Gambling. And I'm thinking, I hadn't been there that long. I think, oh no, did I leave some tools? I mean, obviously, as you can imagine, there's a very, very, very strict routine of collecting up the tools, you know, a specific system of how you know all the tools are accounted for before they get wandered down and patted down before they leave your workshop. And I thought, oh crikey, what have I, something gone wrong? And they pulled me over and they said, look, we've been up all night because of you. And it was the night sort of staff. There's obviously a skeleton staff. They don't have a full staff on at night time. And I'm like, what? They said, we've been running around this whole prison because of your plumbing students. And what had happened was, when my students were getting to undertake their first exam, I taught them a technique. And it's, I said to them, you know, reading your books is fine. And obviously listening to me with your PowerPoints is fine. But it is passive learning. You've really got to make yourself think. When we think, when you're made to think hard, that's when you learn. So I said, what you should do is you should get yourself into pairs and you should write a quiz for each other, a 10-question quiz for each other about the topic, you know, you're all revising for. So they all got themselves into pairs in this class this particular day. And of course, now they're thinking of questions, right, what can I ask him that he won't know? Because they're all competitive. You know, they want to get 10 out of 10 themselves and for the next person to get 2 out of 10. Something. So they're thinking of questions. They've obviously got to think of questions they actually know the answers for, but hard enough so that their partner doesn't sort of get them. And of course, so they write them out. They swap papers and everyone goes through and answers them. And of course, then they get the answers back. And then once again, they're thinking hard because they're thinking, oh, I'm going to give half a point for that. Why are you giving half a point for that? Well, you didn't get that right. So once again, they're building all this neurological architecture. You know, they're actually thinking so much about the actual topic. And they loved this little technique. And what happened was they all went back to their cells. And I think they then have dinner, come out of their cells, have dinner. And then they'd go back to their cells. And in the evening, what was happening was that one of them would buzz the buzzer and a guard would have to come up, yeah. And, oh, can you just add this to John? He's over on cell block H. And obviously they have to read it because they can't just let messages fly about the prison. And, I mean, it's a quite big prison. You know, it's got a few square kilometres. So this prison guard would have to run over to cell block H, give it to so-and-so, who would then answer the 10 questions, which might have took half an hour, hand it back to this prison guard, who would then have to run back, get it answered, run back with the answers. You got 8 out of 10. Oh, well, tell him I've got, oh, surely that's half a mark, run back. And this was happening with all 12 of my prisoners, and they were all in different wings. So the whole skeleton crew of staff were running around the prison for the whole night. I mean, they only did it for that one night, I think, once they caught on, I think. But, I mean, actually, I did have a couple of guys come up and say, oh, wow, we actually learnt quite a lot about plumbing. Well, I didn't know that. And it was fantastic. And they used to use that technique all the time. So they would put themselves in groups. They would quiz each other endlessly. Now, the adults I taught in evening classes, you know, trying to get them to do things like that was quite hard. And then social media came along. And that's when I got on social media and I thought, oh, this is interesting. crikey, there's WhatsApp groups forming, there's Twitter DM groups forming, there's Facebook groups, and they are constantly talking about topics. And that's brilliant. That's fantastic. That's how you standardise an industry. You don't standardise an industry with experts like me, or supposedly experts. I mean, I don't even call myself an expert, but I do get sent some of the standards. You don't standardise an industry by someone writing out loads and loads and loads of standards, giving it to the ward body, say, right, develop a course out of that, and then expect everyone to remember it in 3 days. Impossible. And it's not just me saying that. It's evidenced that that's impossible. You know, the research, there's lots of educational research out there if my industry bothered to actually read it.